written in fantasy. So Tim and I were talking, we might start off with discussing fantasy books that have origins in them, and like His Dark Materials trilogy, and any other examples that people can come up with that have really notable origins in them. So anyone like to start? Is it just things we could talk about?
How do you start?
You've got notes, you've got,
I was going to start by saying, not just books, it's fantasy, and religion. I mean, there's fantasy games, there's movies and other media as well. And sometimes that can be even more crucial, but I'll talk about that later.
Oh, okay. His Dark Materials is one where I particularly think it's really funny in the movie they didn't call it the church, they called it something else.
The Magisterium?
Yeah. And it's so damn obvious. It's the church. I don't know how they thought that was a secret.
It's like the Vatican. You know,
Another famous writer who wrote about religion was C.S. Lewis, who had a very Christian agenda to push. You've got Narnia, where it's very allegorical. But you've also got the Perelander trilogy, where it's not particularly allegorical. It's actually quite pushed on. And he had some pretty weird ideas in that one as well. Also, this is Tolkien, where he went to obviously a great deal of trouble to create a religion, but ultimately, with the Lord of the Rings, it doesn't really affect the plot whatsoever. So there's three examples I can think of. Yep. And what was remarkable about that?
Oh, it does bit of quite a Requiem for Homo Sapiens. He did a series of his Broken God, and he went through the voyages of a villager who went from being that to a large city, who explored all through science and religion and various things. It's very in depth, but it went through his journey of life.
Okay, so
the
story of becoming a very enlightened character. Okay.
Journey through all the
mystery,
because he tried an unbelievable amount of religion and started his own religion and had it taken away from him and left the planet.
Okay, so it's a multi-religion world.
In Terry Pratchett's Colour of Magic, the wizards tend to function a lot like an organised religion, complete with prophecies and creation story.
The dodgy prophecy is kind of a staple of fantasy, isn't it? It's interesting how often it manages to sort of exist without an underlying religion to keep it up, to hold it up. It just sort of, someone makes a prophecy, man. Fair enough. You know, whereas in reality, no one really puts any credence in the prophecies of other people's religions, do they? I mean, occasionally you get your Nostradamus or so on, but mostly, if, you know, only the true believers believe the world is really going to end when the Messiah comes back.
So do you think that those ones, Dave, those kind of premises, are usually in books where magic is taking the place of religion?
Quite possibly. Yeah. I mean, I think in meetings particularly is a prime example. But yeah, you're probably right. It's where magic is enough, so everyone goes, oh, prophecy, well, it was a wizard. I've got
to believe it.
Yeah.
Mm.
But often in fantasy, there is still a god in the world where there's a religion. So the prophecy may not be made by a god, but there are gods in those worlds. But they're quite different gods to the gods of the religions of this world, and that they tend to come down and, you know, zap you if you do something wrong. They're more involved in human.
They've got the human pettiness of a lot of the Greek and Roman gods.
Yes.
Especially in Eddings. I'm just thinking of some of the gods in Eddings. They're pathetic. I mean, they're 8-year-olds with lightning bolts. It's frightening.
And that's, that aspect of them isn't particularly unrealistic. The Greek and Roman gods are like 8-year-olds. Well, I mean, they're like horny teenagers with lightning bolts.
Not particularly sort of bright horny teenagers. I suppose that's an oxymoron, really. Okay, let's not go too far into it's religion, okay? But the problem with religion in the fantasy world is, one of the aspects of fantasy when you're creating a world, as we do, is you need to create the world which is out there. It's other. But at the same time, you need to have it sufficiently here that you can link to it. I think if you ever truly wrote an other, nobody would read it because you wouldn't be able to understand or relate to any of the characters. Now, because religion is a profound part of the human psyche, it's a nice link point. And certainly in a lot of books, the idea that magic has replaced religion, I'm actually thinking of the Magician's Guild. Now that really functioned like a religious society. It was the Vatican. It was amazing. And even to the extent where you had the heresies. It's like the Pope being a Mason. It's really what you were writing there, because
ironically, the reason why it's written like that is because I didn't have a religious upbringing, and I didn't think I could. You write what you know, particularly when you first start. And I didn't think I could pull off a religion. I also didn't think I could pull off writing sex scenes, but that's not because I didn't have sex. At least I didn't know if I could write a sex scene and had people go,
I don't know what she's been doing.
Well, not so much that, because that's a really bad sex scene. I don't want to end up in that, what's that award system where they award,
wooden spoon.
I didn't think I could mention that at all. But I didn't write religion because I hadn't really grown up in a religious family or anything like that, and I also had only really seen religion in a negative light. My grandfather was a Roman Catholic, and he was more the sort of guy who would, go to church, go to the club, go and get drunk, go home, beat his wife up, go to church, ask forgiveness, get it, go back to the club, go and beat his wife again. I had a lot of negative things I saw, and I didn't think it was very fair to. I suspected if I wrote about religion, it wouldn't be very flattering. But then when I came to write the second series, it's all about religion. You read the book before. It's the sort of world where I thought, what if those classical gods did exist and they'd like to meddle with humans? Well, as it turned out, I didn't get anywhere near as bad as the classical gods do get. sleeping with demons and nymphs and producing, half demons and stuff like that. But that's kind of... My story came from imagining what.
You read the wonderful Gene Wolfe series about the soldier with amnesia, and he's a Greek soldier with amnesia, and he keeps interacting with the gods, but he doesn't realise it because he's, he hasn't been paid. He's got amnesia and he's a bit confused. So he's telling the story, and you realise that in fact he's having a conversation with Dionysus. And it's really interesting that that whole idea of the gods are just people is very. They act like people is very, it's alien to what we think of as religion now, but it's very consistent with what religion was, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not at all unrealistic.
And I think
it's more appears, you've got magic and religion, it's not very heavy on the emphasis, but people do have patron gods, and the gods do feature, and so do the immortals. Mm. And I'm reading Trickster's Choice and Trickster's Queen at the moment, and it's about the trickster god versus the god of the white people, which is Mithras and the great goddess. And there are a couple of rituals alluded to. It's not a big part of it, but the gods are there. And you have magic as well.
Yeah. The concept of the patron god really flashes back to Moorcock's classic Eternal Champion series with the classic Elric, who had this patron god. And as Elric travelled through the multiverse, his patron god took on different aspects. And that was an amazing exploration of religion. And what I particularly liked about what Moorcock did with polytheistic multiverse he put together was that the structure of the polytheism actually contributed to the structure of the world. And that's something I think as fantasy writers we've sort of missed the boat that to a certain extent, because a religion creates a society. Mm-hmm. And how cool would it be to actually create a really funky religion and let it drift into mythology and see what kind of society that religion would create and then live within that society. That'd be a really cool way to go.
Well, Jenny Fallon had the opposite thing where her gods, aside from certain gods, but like the god of death, which is something where it's always going to be there no matter who believes in it, in the god or not, because everyone's always going to end up believing in death. All her gods relied on their strength, on people believing in them. So if it all stopped, when the countries were at war, the war gods would really come, tough with himself and, strong. And the trickster gods would, trick people into, manipulation and political stuff. And the goddess of love used to constantly meddle with people.
But I mean, that concept that the gods lose power if people stop believing, it's been used, and it's quite an interesting concept to have the idea that this supernatural being of whatever, however you put it together, would be dependent for its existence on faith. So it's like a creature of faith, which is quite an interesting concept when you really get down to what it's about and what that says about a society that could spawn such a creature.
Mm-hmm.
I keep going back to this idea of the religion and the society, one creating the other, and then the two become mutually self-informing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's relevant to books or anything, but in Stargate they have that situation going on with the ancients. That's why the ancients don't actually get involved at all in any human culture, because when humans believe in them, it gives them power, and that's why they feed off of people believing in it, just like you just said. But instead of the cultures being, you know, gods and people together, the ancients just aren't anywhere. They're completely devoid and do not go anywhere near the humans, because they know they will corrupt them as soon as the humans start believing in them.
Who will they corrupt? The humans or the ancients themselves?
The ancients get corrupted.
If they're
because
humans
that's
where
power corrupts, absolutely.
Yeah. That's pretty
interesting.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you can be corrupted by somebody's belief in you.
because if that belief gives you power.
Yeah, absolutely. That works nicely.
Yeah, I like
that. And it gives you more than just physical power as well, because if they believe in you, then you can control them to such an extent. You can manipulate their emotions and their thoughts and their actions. So,
which would build into the concept.
Religion is really, it works at double levels as well, in that it works at the level of building a whole society.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know about the religion to know how and how they feel about religion, to know how it's put together. I mean, even if they have, you know, they are a sort of tolerant society, there's multiple pantheons within it or whatever, well, that tells you a lot about them in the first place. But it also, the other thing about religion is it is, and especially if you're writing, like, pre-modern people, you're writing people from an era before, well before our own, religion is a prime motivator of people. It's one of the big reasons why people do stuff. I mean, it still is today, but very much so in a pre-modern society. Knowing someone's religious affiliation tells you a huge amount about them.
And you can mess with that in the context of whether the belief is based in fear, or trust, or hope, or whatever.
There's a huge amount. But the relationship of someone and their God, as a writer, it's a really useful tool, because it's a relationship the character has that isn't to any of the other characters. You know, it gives you a way to sort of tug on them on their motivation without having to structure it compared to everyone else in your novel.
You've got to be careful with that, though, because it would be too easy to just have some guy who is ultra fanatical. And you've really got to.
You've got to, like everything, you've got to use it with care. But it is a really powerful tool. One of the things which I found immensely influential, I'm a huge fan of a particular role playing game world where religion is a hugely intrinsic part of everyone's life. And gaming is an interesting one, because because once you're in the that situation where you're having to use, you know, you can't give, games are constrained to have religions that kind of work. People are told, oh, you believe this, and they just go, stupid. They don't like it. As a writer, you can sometimes have your characters get away with believing something stupid. Certainly, you can get away with having, you know, it's plausible to have your characters believe in something that's, you know, suicidal. We know that. I mean, not that suicide is associated entirely with religion. But
it can be.
It does happen, yeah.
The world is always stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
You could never write what actually happened.
No, you're right.
Sorry, you've got a question back here.
I was going to say, what do you think about the issue that religion is inherently polarised, and that gives you automatically, in a fantasy world or in a science fiction world, something on which to build on without having an emotional attachment? You've got a polarity with a religion.
What's the other end of the polarity?
Well, good and evil.
I see. The religion itself
gives you that. You know, there's those who believe and those who don't.
Mm.
So you're automatically separating yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're going to go into that, you've often got multiple polarities, because even within the religion you've got believers and unbelievers, and then within the religion itself you've got winning and losing, good guys, bad guys. So you've got a point there. You've automatically got a tension within the plot as soon as you introduce the religion.
And realistically, difficult. The worlds can be a bit more complicated than that.
The voices and the people. So later I'm forgetting the what I've actually written. But I had the two religions in my second series, and in the first book I wrote about one side, really good baddies, which is the other side, of course. And then the second one I'm writing about the other side, for whom the baddies are the first guys. So they weren't actually good and evil. They were polarised, but it wasn't necessarily good and evil. They were just in opposition.
There's a whole bunch of other polarities.
Oh, yeah.
The barbarians are the civilised, or the tolerant and the intolerant. Which is interesting because we're used to intolerance being bad, but actually you make it so that, it's very easy in a fantasy novel to make it so the intolerant guys are right.
Science fiction too.
You can
have fun with that.
And there's a lot of societies where there's more than one religion. I mean, Judaism is a good one. They know they're right, but they're used to being a minority in any society.
I read somewhere once that apparently there's very few moments in history where a society was simply just one race and one religion. It's nearly always been mixed everywhere in the world. If anything, commingling is the natural way to be, because it's been the way humans have been throughout most of history.
Question?
Two things. Except with those moments in history, they're probably based on texts written by people who are members of those religions who may have a very limited view.
Yeah, but you didn't have any people saying there's only one kind of person here.
Because there's lots of religious texts which are very blinkered.
It's
coming from one picture.
But you can have historical accounts of gods being actually co-opted into other people's pantheons. Dionysus is a Roman pantheon. Bacchus kicked out all the dead as far as cults.
All the pre-Buddhist Tibetan demons are now either assimilated or co-opted and have now become given jobs within the
There's this thing happening throughout all of religion. You notice definite trends and definite similarities with the stories because people commingle and they share their stories, and that's what happens.
There is a Buddhist saint who turns up in Christianity, exactly the same legend of a woman who tucked her eyes out to avoid having to give in to a man who fancied it because of her lovely eyes. So she said, okay, have them. And she plucked out an eye and gave it to him. And there is the same religion in Christianity, the same stories in Christianity.
Really?
Yeah. Her name was Saint Treadwell, and she has a shrine on Orkney somewhere.
Okay, so this is one of the Dark Ages saints.
It's across somehow from from
certainly
Buddhism.
Not biblical.
Saints, almost by definition, only a few of them are.
Well,
that gentleman's been trying to.
Yes, he has.
I hope I should read it.
I've just recently started reading Jacqueline Carey's Crucial series. And love it to bits, but I just like the idea in it that there's this biblical commingling of gods. Mm-hmm. It's not just the. Now I forget the name, but it's not just the gods of that nation, it's the gods of all nations, in some cases actually working together, in some cases. Being the same person or acting in the And the very idea of it is that you get it in this point where the nations and these people are separated by these different beliefs, but the gods are not. And it's fantastic to get this idea of these gods are just sitting up there going, I don't care. If you do this, please do it for all. And it's just this beautiful idea that a person born of one nation can still do the work of another god from another nation. From
Carrie nation. Does that beautifully, doesn't she? I think it's terrific. I really enjoy that.
So it's a very interesting and intimate idea of what God and what the whole idea of belief is all about and faith itself.
That was something that was touched on in the Piers Anthony Tarot series, the trilogy where the basic idea behind it was all gods are okay and all religions are acceptable. And they were having such a hard time selling this to this group of people that they ended up saying, okay, the god of this planet is Satan. And that's how they ended up resolving it, because he is the ultimate anti-god. But, it's this idea, all of these are the same thing, you're believing the same thing, why are you fighting?
Hello.
Ari McAvoy's The Damiana trilogy.
I was going to mention that.
That has a lot of religious, Western religious politics built into the whole storyline about Damiana, who's this person, and has a guy named
He has a personal relationship with the Archangel Raphael.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it actually switches
with
the third book, where Damiana becomes the angel and Raphael is actually...
Without giving too much away, is it? That's really interesting, because that's a fantasy novel where magic is very much real, but it's completely also set within a world where the sort of... it's basically a medieval Catholic, very literal version of Christianity is quite true. There are angels, there is the devil, he is a fallen angel, he is bad news. The lead character has a personal relationship with the Archangel Raphael. He, in fact, summons him and then they get to talking and he ends up, Raphael ends up becoming his lute teacher. And it's a great trilogy. I really like it. And it's really interesting because of the way it treats Christianity as, as a fantasy religion. It's this is what it's like. It's about, angels and demons and things.
She wrote a number of books around not just the Christian thing, but also the Chinese mythology. See the Black Dragon. Black Dragon being a symbol of power and guardianship. And that was the first book, Team of Black Dragon, and then Christine book. It was more Chinese mythology as opposed to religion. A question I'd like to ask is, where do you see Frank Herbert's genealogy? Mm-hmm. Does it have religious elements? Does it have more messianic?
There's an interesting mix. I'm glad you brought Dune up, because I was actually pondering about bringing it up myself, because there's certainly the messianic overtone, which is not uncommon, but he also tinkers with an interesting and kind of weird concept of the Zen Sunni prophets that he keeps bringing up, and he keeps at the beginning of most of the chapters having these little Zen Sunni, and I just struggle with the concept that the Buddhist Zens and the Sunni would ever join and become the Zen Sunni. I mean, for starters, there'd be the fight. No, we're the Sunni Zen, not the Zen Sunni. And then there's the odd dichotomy between the two actual religions. And that one sort of bugged me a little bit. And then to overlay that with the whole Christian messianic, it was really bizarre.
There are a lot of... It's common among mystics to say that all mystics are essentially the same. So that's what you're saying is, Sunni is a very mystic branch of Islam. Perhaps they eventually will go, mystics,
But Frank Herbert actually wrote another book called The Godmaker, which he tacks straight on that point, is that all gods, all religion is one. Just different facets that people have. It's all one, it doesn't matter what happens. And he wrote that. You wrote a lot of it.
I find that interesting. I was at the panel this morning talking about real science fiction, and one of the comments came up about, if you're going to write hard science, for goodness sake, at least know the science. And I find, because I've actually studied religion at university, and I find myself cringing when I hear people saying, oh, religions are the same, because if you actually look at them, they're not. Mm-hmm. They're bizarrely opposed. There's nothing... You try and actually compare Christianity with Islam, and there's just nothing there.
And that's between two that have a massive amount in common. They acknowledge most of the... Islam acknowledges all basically pre-Islamic Christian figures, Moses and Jesus and whatever, to some extent. And so on. And even then, when they've got in common, they still are not the same.
No.
But if you get down to the nitty-gritty of the basic teachings, don't you think that all religions are trying to teach you two things, which are sort of love and faith, if you like?
No.
I do. All the religious studies major too, right?
There's the Aztecs, of course, who religion believed that you had to cut people's heart out in order to keep the sun shining. There's not a lot of love in there.
No,
I was going to say this thing about all religions being the
being the same or not being the same. I think what's probably the underlying similarity is, and it comes close to what you said, it's just I'm not optimistic about it, is that I think the human dynamics underlying are very similar.
Yes.
So the things that religion is used for are very similar. It's a useful conquering tool. And we like to differentiate between Christian and pre-Christian, but actually the way in which the Romans and the Christians conquered weren't that dissimilar. You know, the Romans just were a bit more laid back about it. You know, it's like, oh, you've got this god, well, he's like this god of ours, so great. They're the same, let's forget about it. Christians were a bit more dogmatic, you know. No, you can't have this god. All right, he can be a saint.
Yeah, the Romans had those swords they used as well, which sort of gave them a slight edge there at times.
The essential dynamic of we use the religion as a unifying system to enable us to go out and conquer a territory. Mm. That runs through Islam, it runs through
the whole thing.
I had this funny little sublime thought where I said, what are the motivations for religion? I said, okay, it's just basic survival, finding food, avoiding becoming food, and continuing the species, or fight, flight, and fornication, or power, protection, and fertility, protection from natural disasters or enemies, please God, don't let the rain, floods come, etc. Life after death, which is also, which also may be to do with instinct for continuing the species, avoiding or conquering your enemies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, religion is all. All religions have similar. Can be put to similar uses, and they're all essentially trying to answer the same questions. But they do have very different answers to those same questions.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about Aboriginal Dreamtime? I don't think that's a religion.
Oh, it certainly is.
And it certainly is still relevant now with certain Aboriginals. But I don't think that the stories that are told, I can't remember anywhere I would say that they're being told for domination.
There are a lot of stories about traditional fights between
explaining why something.
Explaining,
yes. Aboriginal mythology, they were never politically unified to the point where there were sort of wars of conquest, but there are certainly stories told about, this is why we hate those guys. There's a plenty of those.
They actually have a great flood legend as well.
Yeah. What's up?
There's a great flood
legend. Religions do.
They just put a stand up for a while, so... we see you. Speak.
Just a question. It's something I've had ideas of before, and I'm really curious as to whether it's out there. I'm sure there's some, must have been some assumption on there. Is there any fantasy or modern or however you want to say this, books that are set primarily in the afterlife or in an afterlife of a form of any fantasy?
Yes. The classic example is Dante. Dante's Inferno and the three books the Inferno, the Purgatorio, and Paradise. Mm-hmm. And there have been modern versions of that.
Mm.
Hell, there's a Larry Niven and Jerry Quinnell version.
Is the Anne Bishop one qualified for that? Because there's an awful lot of in hell.
Haven't read it, but
Anne Bishop's a bit strange because the religion, they're not really gods as such. Like, they are, but they aren't. They've just got magic, and she knows pretty much everything about them ever.
She wrote the Tir Alan series. I can't remember how to pronounce it specifically, but that was basically where the afterlife person would come and get you and take you away to what they call the fairy land. Pretty much. I can't remember exactly what it was called. But they were all based in that world and trying to bring them back together, to bring all the people that have died back to connections with everybody
else. A huge chunk of Sean Williams, The Crooked Letter, is a large chunk of that's essentially in the afterlife. It's in the world you go to when you die. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially the afterlife. There's
Hamilton.
There's Mike Carey's Lucifer cycle, which is set in about a dozen and a half different afterlives.
Depending on where you are.
That Hamilton's very nice, actually.
Jim Wolfe's Knight and Wizard stories, where the universe is in a nice stack, but they spend a lot of time ending up in one or the other. A level above or below is essentially in heaven or hell.
Quite a significant chunk of Robert Heinlein's Joe was already a dozen within the afterlife.
That's true.
Unlike a Moorcock novel called The Warhound and the World's Pain, where the guy was out looking for the Holy Grail and going through all hell and everything else to try to find it.
Angel.
Earth is Hell.
What Brings My Job, which is set pretty much entirely in the afterworld, and if I'm really on London's real world, which is an artificial afterlife.
Yes, River World is interesting.
What about books where the religion has become a real religion?
There's a small number of those. Highflyer, of course, is a
Church of All Worlds.
Yes, the Church of All Worlds is a not 100% based.
What? That guy Fox Mark.
No, those books aren't fantasy. They're not fantasy, they're just lies.
Like Spaghetti Monster.
The Church of All the Worlds is a very good example, because there are certainly real beliefs. I'm giving a particularly insane talk sometime later in the convention about real world magicians using the Cthulhu mythos, but that's a very scary subject.
It's a puzzle.
When is that talk?
It's some point later.
I'll find out.
Yeah.
And what about, on top of that, what about real religions reacting to actual books?
Well, like the one you opened with.
My favourite anecdote, I had someone email me once and say, my dad recommends.
It's 2 p.m. Sunday.
Reschedule. There's 50 of us won't be there because we've got another place.
Talk to the programmer.
Somebody emailed me once and said, like, they reckon your books are the work of the devil, and I said, great, can I sue you for copyright? And besides, it's work. Writing a book is bloody hard work. Yeah. And the devil is not about work. The devil doesn't have a work ethic. There's no way he's going to put this much work into doing
it. Yeah, but he
must
pay you to do it,
Paul. Well, hasn't he paid me?
What's the gentleman?
I've got an interesting note about religions and their reactions to fantasy books is that it's probably the best thing that can happen for the publicity of your book is to have a large religion.
Absolutely.
I almost hate to mention it, but Dan Brown.
But not Rushdie. Yeah, not so good at this.
Yeah.
Dan Brown, Hornlon.
What's more interesting is the books that have been banned by religions, but, you know, 50 years later are being used to teach said religion. Mm-hmm. That's a lot more interesting. And actually...
Lewis Carroll.
He was given a lot of flack for, you know, you've got demons and talking animals and this is horrible and bad and we want to ban you and... Christianity sucked over the head.
Transparent allegories all over the place.
Yeah.
Kind of off on a tangent about C.S. Lewis, I was not raised in a religious household, so when I read the books, they had no Christian Judeo overtones to me whatsoever.
Yeah. It's just spoils
it when
someone tells
you. Absolutely. And I said, who?
No, I was raised in a Christian household, but I didn't see it because I read the books when I was, you know, 5 and 6, and I didn't understand what that meant. Mm. And they're aimed at 8-year-olds who don't understand.
But even his adult trilogy had strong Christian overtones.
He gets special points for literally demonising Islam. He actually turns it into a demon. That would be Middle Ages appropriate, but we are a little more enlightened now. And there's some interesting things about if you read works from the sort of the pre-modern era, like the Middle Ages. It's really hard to tell stuff that's just religious allegory from fantasy. The two in the medieval mind are very hard to tell apart.
That tells you a lot about the medieval mind, of course. which is why fantasy is such a fertile breeding ground for religious overtones, undertones, because of the whole where the Middle Ages were in terms of their superstition, and yeah, it's very powerful.
Well, fantasy is a brilliant way to write about, about a religion without actually you write it as an allegory, and you don't really. Whereas if you write it directly, a story set in this world about that religion, you'd probably get in trouble. With fantasy, you can sort of.
But we can do that with everything in fantasy, can't you? It can be used to comment on anything in the social conditions of your time.
A fair amount of fantasy books, a lot of high fantasy as well, they tend to play with polytheistic religions overall. I'm thinking, is that because it's safer? Because there's not a lot of polytheistic religions still around.
And there's also a bit of a tendency among fantasy writers to favour the pagan religions. You know, some are actually practising pagans, which is fine. But it bothers me a bit that some fantasy writers have got this dichotomy of pagan equals good, Christian equals bad.
Mary Whereas, in fact, Bradley.
Any religion can be made to appear good or bad, depending on your characters, can't
I'm
it?
I'm waiting for the fantasy book which has the Buddhist religion, which is bad. Evil,
bit difficult.
Evil Buddhist
nuns. Down with the Dalai Lama.
Evil ninja Buddhist nuns.
Well, I mean, it's not that. I mean, if you read enough, sort of like Chinese history or something, it's not very hard to think of the Buddhists as the bad guys. Mm. They can be pretty harsh. I mean, it's same as every religion. It's almost like there's a really interesting bit of research, or sort of, it's about the idea of fundamentalism. And essentially saying that fundamentalists display the same sort of set of beliefs, regardless of their actual religion. Mm. So that they're essentially, they'll almost inevitably be, patriarchal, conservative, belief in a controlling of their own household, all these other things. And it applies to, Hindu fundamentalists, Christian fundamentalists, Islamic fundamentalists. And it's almost like some of these, these ideas like Islam, or like being becoming an intolerant, conquering religion that wipes out the heathen. It's not as if they're characters of any given religion. They're sort of diseases that affect religion. Religion can get fundamentalism.
Or religion,
any religion can come down with a bad case of fundamentalism, and it completely screw it up for anybody who has to live with it. And certainly, happens to Buddhism a bit less. But
you said a little earlier that religion is a very sort of personal thing, but there's someone's relationship with their god or gods. Mm. But isn't that or more of a herd mentality? Because in a lot of books, is always the entire state, nation, world follows these gods together as a whole. And, in our normal world, we have people, always blindly following Christianity because they are brought up like that, blindly following all sorts of different religions. So would it be a personal choice or just their herd?
We fought a couple of really big century-long wars over that question. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the answer.
Mm-hmm. Both.
Yeah.
Politicians use religion. Best example I think of, Constantine railroading the church to be one church for one empire, Roman Empire.
That's essentially what a lot of Protestantism is about, is whether or not your religious choices are something that you get to make personally, or can be dictated to you by people that are superior in the religion to you. It's a big open question.
Can I just address that question just for a moment? Also, it also gets down to, when you're talking about herd mentality and the whole country, I think it gets down to how robustly you build your world within the fantasy setting, which is one reason why fantasy books tend to be really big, because there's a tendency in a lot of good fantasy to robustly explore that and to have heretics within the structure. I mean, getting back to your magician's guild as a pseudo-religion, you had heretics within that. Mm. It's a very powerful tool that can be used if the writer wants to go there.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah, one of the things that for me really is the difference between a simplistic and a rich depiction of religion is that there's the, you know, often in fantasy novels there is the idea of the religions in conflict, you know, the Christian versus the pagans, or the good or the good versus the evil religions, or whatever. But actually, real religions have schisms and heresies and spend all their time hating, you know, spend a lot of time focusing on the heresies within themselves, and yeah, it's the sort of, and that's the debate that tears societies apart, is the schisms rather than the. It's always, if it's two religions versus one another, the big one always gangs up on the small one usually. And,
Just rewinding a little bit on your question about Buddhism is not an evil religion, but criticised it as one that springs to mind is King Stanley Robinson's Years of Rice and Salt, where the characters go through, they have several lifetimes where they're meant to be gaining wisdom, I guess, but they're getting pretty annoyed with the whole process of dying all the time and end up having rebellion in the afterlife against the whole system.
That's very cool.
It's
not. Can I just interrupt you for a second? We've got four prizes here for insightful questions. So if without the panellists want to start thinking about who we can award them to, just so you can start.
You've got a really insightful question.
Some more really insightful questions. Yes.
Now, when you're talking about religion, what about fantasy books where instead of religion you have a philosophy versus a religion?
Mm-hmm.
Because philosophy is a lot different. You can interact with people with philosophy, but religion is, okay, this is what we say must be done, this is how you must do it. If you think it's wrong, that's just tough cookies.
You can get into there's always a question of definition. Is Buddhism a religion or a philosophy?
It really comes down to gods. If you're worshipping a god, it's a religion. Is that a religion of belief?
Particular set of belief in the supernatural. But that's not necessarily about worship.
They're both very simplistic, I think. I mean, Buddhism is definitely a religion. There's no two ways about it. And it does have a concept of an ultimate reality. It just doesn't call it God and doesn't choose to talk about it in concrete terms. But it's still a religion.
Like talking.
Yeah.
He never said there was a God.
No.
He firmly stated he did not want to have religion. He had religious aspects. But he never wanted to hear.
But he did talk about the unconditioned. Mm-hmm. And if the unconditioned isn't what some people would call God, what is it? It's just they don't concretize it or see an old man with a white beard. He says the unconditioned is something that we can't even talk about because it's beyond our comprehension. And surely that's the best way to treat any, you know, concept of the divine. It's beyond our comprehension. If we can comprehend it, it can't be divine, can it?
Yes.
I was just thinking about the whole religion versus belief thing. Mm. Is they're not always the same thing.
No.
Because I was thinking back to Terry Pratchett, actually, and his Lasted Nation.
Mm.
And if you read through it, it's this boy that gets struck with this horrible disaster. It's not actually a religion system as much as just a set of beliefs.
Yeah.
There's no gods as such, but there's these people that they call the grandfathers in it, that they believe, like, always know the truth and stuff like that. And stuff like that versus ones that are very, obviously very religion-based.
So you're saying that a belief system serves the purpose of a religion in that
book? It can sometimes.
Mm. And does in real life.
And it does in real life, but it's not obviously always the same thing.
Mm.
And, like, one thing that I noticed in the book Nation, I read it not long ago, so I've got a fresh mind, was that they didn't say that if you do this, you're a bad person. It's more, you can do this, but we'd rather you did this. It was more of, like, suggestions as opposed to do it like this, do it like this, do it like this, and then this terrible thing happens, and it's this, I think it's a typhoon or something, takes out the entire place by this one child, and he has to clean up after it, and these big blocks that they put down, they call them the god anchors, even though they don't really have, like, gods as such, and the grandfather's always in his head saying, you must put god anchors back, otherwise the gods are going to go, everything they're going, but why should I? And it was an interesting way of questioning it. Yeah. I found from Terry Pratchett, I was seeing most of his stuff is Discworld. It's a very dark way of looking
at it. Sounds
like
a dark Pratchett, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the purposes of the discussion that we have engaged in, what
When we actually define with religion, is it the belief system, is it the worship or the spirituality aspect or the philosophy and values?
The difference between belief system and often religion is seen as I'm probably going to get disagreed with here, but that's okay. A set of practices that go with a belief structure. So it's quite common for fundamentalists to say, "I'm not religious. I believe in X, Y, and Z. You know, I'm not religious."
So
religious is often seen as the structures.
I think we're talking about belief systems or philosophies, whether that say something about the metaphysics of the world.
Yeah.
You say something about what ultimate reality is, whether there's an afterlife. Answer those sort of questions. I mean, we're not talking about things like communism, which studiously avoid those questions as essentially irrelevant.
Actually, communism, by the standards we're talking about today, communism would count as a religion because it's old-style communism, as derived from old-style Marxism, is basically saying these things will happen. There is a march of history, and we will.
But it's not a metaphysical plan. So
it is a metaphysical plan because it says that in the end it doesn't matter. The march of history is going to happen.
The history is physical. It's not metaphysical.
No. They're saying that it doesn't matter what individual human beings do. This process will work itself out.
Yes, but it's still a physical process. It's not a metaphysical plan. It's a speculative claim, but not a metaphysical.
I would say that something that is inevitably going to happen, regardless of what anybody does.
But they don't say it's never. Marx does not claim that if an asteroid hits the Earth and we all die, then the march of history will continue on. It's a physical claim, not a metaphysical.
I think he's suggesting it's going to happen because it's going to happen, not
because of human nature. Has been foretold by the prophets.
I still personally, I think old-style Marxism is pretty much metaphysical. It's talking about the whole process as if it works the same way as a set of laws of physics.
I think it just lacks what Bevan just said. It doesn't have any set of rituals that make it into a religion, but it comes down close, doesn't it?
In the Castle series by Steph Swainston, not many people seem to have read it, so I'm going to do a very, very brief recap. There is somebody who leaves the castle, and he is called Seth, and he is able to bestow immortal life to other people. Now, he quite clearly has supernatural power that people can perceive and believe in. However, he has told everybody that he has been given a mission from God to protect the world from these particular invading creatures, which they can also see. But everyone believes in God through the evidence of, you know, Sen and his immortality and his ability to bestow immortality on other people. Is this a religious belief? Or is this, it's a fact. They can see that these people would live forever. But they have no proof that there is an actual God.
Yes.
I think so, religion.
I'd say yes.
Yeah.
Fairly simply, I'd say yes.
But you were first. And
So it's still a religion because they don't have any proof in the God.
Yeah.
But they still have proof that for some reason this being has power that they don't have.
Yeah,
in the... that's still going on here.
There's plenty of religions that are able to offer some, you know, evidence of their power.
Well, if you show the name anywhere, like a toaster, and said, this toaster is powered by God.
Even then,
that's the
toaster. But that leads back into the whole Clarksian idea. Anything that is high technology enough is indistinguishable from magic.
Magic is religion.
And you can also reverse it. Any magic is.
But you might think in magic the toaster is magic, but if you say a god makes that toaster,
this toaster is God's work. This divine creation that makes our toast brown and tasty.
the only problem with that is finding a PowerPoint. That's an issue. Because it will fail because you don't have a PowerPoint.
Can we have a question from these guys at the front now? Yeah, go on.
It's just more of a question because I don't read too much of the fantasy stuff.
Mm.
I was just wondering, because someone mentioned something about you having a personal connection to God. I'm not too up on religion, so I don't know how it's going to work, but... So, you might have a personal connection to a God, and the way I visualise it is, if God has to have this personal connection to billions of people, he's not going to be focusing a lot of his efforts on all those people.
You wouldn't think so. No.
So are there any books that anyone's wrote where maybe addresses that? Because I know you said that some of the books deal with the afterlife, so they must deal with what gods actually do. But have any authors addressed that? Maybe saying something like, some gods only focus on the top 1% of the population.
The Torah-based books, the gods are white, they're right there. But they only speak to certain people.
Mm.
And generally you're following the lives of these certain people, but they're considered special at some point because they're touched by the gods or have had their mother sleep with the gods or
bad touch.
So they've
got their own gods. Like the gods divide the people up a few weeks or something. Who knows?
The gods compete with each other over dominion over places. Yeah. They only communicate.
Well, that's common enough, isn't it? Where gods fight we want.
Yes.
Well, Marcus Cusack does that with death. You know, death comes to everyone and it has a personal relationship with everyone, but only when they are dying and dead. So and Death states at the beginning that you know, he shouldn't have watched one specific character, the main character of the book, and but he keeps coming back and having this personal relationship with the character, and you know, he manages to do this with all sorts of different people throughout history, and he still remembers them and keeps certain parts of them, but in the end he does come to everyone.
Do you have a question, then?
I do. That's more about the definition of religion for the purposes of this panel. It was
kind of inconclusive, I would think.
Yeah,
scholars have been arguing about this for years, mate. We'll never settle it. What is religion? We're going to settle it in an hour.
About the toaster. Yeah. There's the cargo cults in New Guinea, the Philippines, which were basically primitive people worshipping technology.
Yes.
And this still happens to this day.
Indeed.
Go
to any computer shop.
Yeah.
It exhibits all the hallmarks of religion, but it was based on something that was
high technology.
It was flawed logic on the basis of people not having all the information.
And some people would say any religion is based on flawed knowledge.
We don't have all the information.
And we don't have all the information.
What's
our friend Dave?
Just the most recent example I can think of right at this moment is Fallout 3, which is a game. But in it, basically, you have the Church of the Atom, which is basically a bunch of crackheads who are worshipping this atom bomb, which hasn't exploded yet. And so they're worshipping its mightiness for the fact that it brought around all this change. But this is 200 years on from the first apocalypse. And so they're worshipping something that is
I hope so.
You'd understand that these people are aware some shit did go down, something did explode. It looks a lot like one of these things, and now they're worshipping it, and this regression happens.
It just goes to show that we can imbue anything with metaphysical quality.
Have
you ever read The Lost Worlds of 2001 by Arthur C. Clarke? The Lost Worlds of 2001? In that, he actually, when you're talking about imbuing anything, he said that apparently somewhere, and he didn't say where, there is a small sect that actually does worship a large black monolith.
That would be.
He said he was very surprised to find this out.
And you can know there's a wonderful bit in one of the Roger Zelazny books, has the agnostic's prayer, where there's a whole sort of organized religion of agnostics who have a full religious system of, oh God, who may or may not exist. But we implore you whether or not you are paying attention. You can construct a lot of things. You can turn it back on itself to the point of absurdity, but we seem to have already done that.
We're good at that. We've only got 5 or 6 minutes left, so any last questions? I think you've had a question for a while, haven't you?
Okay. I'm familiar with how it's very easy to jump on the monotheism or the pantheism bandwagons, but has any author done well a religious system in which people who engage themselves in ceremony That ceremony creates basically a large discontinuity in space-time, where that ceremony, by engaging in the ceremony, you engage in a timeless ceremony of all people who ever have or ever will engage in a ceremony, including associated spirit entities.
I don't think we need a book to tell us that. All religions have got it.
No, but the instead of the afterlife approach, it's the you engage in ceremony and space-time within the ceremony gets stretched instead.
Yeah. But isn't that part of many beliefs?
It's a metaphysical level.
Yeah.
That kind of sounds a bit, to me, like similar to this with the Aboriginal cave painting, where the actual painting itself, it's the act of painting, and everyone who's also done that in the past, everything coming
so
in.
That's basically what I'm asking.
I mean, at a metaphysical level, that's what you're doing when you, that's what the Catholic community is.
If you're taking communion, it takes part in that act. Exactly. Yeah.
Always
I think all religions got some kind of
spiritually connecting to everyone. Prayer is different because you're spiritually connecting to your God at that time. It's generally a specific need, unless you're talking Catholic dogma, but that's different again.
And that's everyone coming in together and connecting.
Yeah. There's lots of different types. There's not really a sense that you're praying with people who have died thousands of years ago when we're praying for similar things. There's not that sense.
Depends on
Okay. One last question. Oh, two questions. Okay, you two.
Got a more another example on sufficiently advanced technology being indistinguishable from a religious deity.
Mm.
Stargate SG-1, anybody? They basically have got an entire religion or a bunch of high technology beings that have built a religion in order to keep their subjects under control. You know, you will worship me as if I were a god because I'm a god.
It's not really any different to, like, say, the pharaohs being god kings, only with better special effects.
Or the Roman emperors declaring themselves gods.
They weren't actually creating a religion. They were taking the religion of the people and stepping in the place of their gods. So they saw an opening. They saw an opening.
You don't need to actually be super powerful to have people worship you as a god.
Just say you're a god.
So there was a job vacancy.
Sure helps if you are.
What the point they raised was, well, I'm that much more powerful than all of these people. Why shouldn't I call myself a god? How am I not a god?
And they dealt with that in one of the episodes where a person who used to be a member of the SGC had been stranded on this planet for a while and had so much greater technology than everyone else that he was a god to them.
Again, I think that concept...
Again, the Romans said that about the emperors. They had a pretty good point. Yeah. They really were a lot more powerful.
Okay, last question. Who was it? You, wasn't it?
Yes. This is actually going back to what you said earlier about the conception that the pagan religions are good and the atheistic religions are evil. I'm actually using Jennifer Fowler as my example for this one. You also said that there is the gods in fantasy are a lot more proactive than they are in reality. I'm thinking a monotheistic god, much like, say, Zephista in Medellon, if he's that proactive, I mean, he's a monotheistic god, has all the hallmarks of Christian god, and he's proactive to the point he's actually sort of intervening with his followers. This guy's not very pleasant. He's actually making life for his followers hell. And so I can sort of see where the polytheistic religion where you worship certain aspects of stuff and have lots of feasts would be more desirable than the one where you're not allowed to do anything because it's a sin and they'll... And
yeah, there's a lot to be said for a good party.
You've got everything else.
For a party.
Yeah,
for a party. So the point I was making is that a proactive Christian God, as we perceive him today, what would happen if, would this religion, how much power would the religion have?
Come on, Armageddon, we'll find out.
can you imagine if the Westboro Baptist Church is, right, then apparently we're all going to hell anyway.
Can we take one more question?
Look,
we're over time, mate. Sorry. Why don't we have a discussion afterwards? Anyone who wants to discuss further, come and grab somebody.